that because, of course, our songbooks are very, very predominantly, I guess, based on psalms, and so that frequently you'll find that these songs are based on those psalms. But it's just coincidental that it was from verse 8 in Psalm number 5, the psalm that we had studied last week, that our song number 99, Savior, Lead Me Lest I Stray, was based. So whether consciously or providentially and unconsciously, I appreciate Bob selecting that psalm. I had intended, as you can see, to reference it again last week's psalm in verse 3, where David says, "In the morning, O Lord, you will hear my voice. In the morning, I will order my prayer to you and eagerly watch." We will find, of course, in our study of the Psalms particularly, that David will say that he prays in the morning, he prays during the day, he prays in the evening, he prays late at the night. He did a tremendous amount of praying, as a matter of fact. But, of course, on the first day of each week, we gather here in the morning to give our praise, to uplift our voices in song and in prayer to our God. And we know, as Psalm 5:3 taught us last week, that God is listening. He listens throughout the day. But what a great way to start the day. David, first thing, as his eyes open apparently, would be found either reciting or remembering or much of the time, I imagine, writing these psalms that have entered into history as these inspired presentations, songs of the highest magnitude of beauty and wisdom to praise our God. And so we are gathered here this morning to do as David did, to order our prayer before our God and eagerly watch. And we're glad you're here. Appreciate each and every one of you who have that dedication, that devotion to your God to fulfill David's ideas there, to prove yourself faithful to your God in your presence here this morning. So we thank you for joining us. I would like to point out this particular picture is actually the view that David would have on those mornings. This is a sunrise over Mount Olivet. David's palace was built in such a way in Jerusalem that he would be looking out directly at this hill across the Kidron Valley. He would be turned to the east, of course, to do that. If you turn 90 degrees to the north, he would be looking up the hill at the mountain upon which the tabernacle sat, and he wanted to build a temple, and upon which his son Solomon actually would build that temple. That is, actually today, the Jerusalem sunrise, this picture having been taken just 2 years ago. Turn to Psalm number 103, verse 1. We'll look at verses 20 through 22 in just a moment. But the idea I first wanted to plant in our minds here this morning was to think about David rising in the morning. Could we not do the same thing that he did? Wouldn't it be great if you could rise every morning and just feel invigorated, feel eager to get into that day, to be filled with thoughts about your God and how good that he is? In the 103rd Psalm, if this is among those that David would use early in the morning, and I suppose that at least there's a high likelihood that it was, yeah, wouldn't it be great if we would just follow the advice and the pattern, the example of David? In verse 1 he says, "Bless the Lord, O my soul, and all that is within me, bless his holy name." As you skip down to verses 20 through 22, the last three verses of this psalm, he says, "Bless the Lord, you his angels, mighty in strength, who perform his word, obeying the voice of his word. Bless the Lord, all you his hosts, you who serve him doing his will. Bless the Lord, all you works of his, in all places of his dominion. Bless the Lord, O my soul." This is an expression of great joy. This is an expression of satisfaction. He appreciates his God. He appreciates the things that his God has done for him. And he wants not just to worship him, to bless him, speak well of him. Pardon me. Still struggling with these allergies here, but feeling a lot better. Yeah, I've had to say that every week for, 6 weeks now? You know, so maybe it's getting obvious by this time. But actually, I'm feeling a lot better this morning. And he not only wants to worship his God, that personally, as you see in the very last line of the psalm, "Bless the Lord, O my soul." But in 20 and 21, he calls upon angels to bless the Lord. He calls upon the hosts in verse 21, which is just a way of saying everybody, and probably includes the heavenly host primarily, because then he says, you who serve him doing his will, and then in verse 22, all you works of his. So in one of these expressions or another, he has covered all of creation. Then apparently David's heart, is just so full of joy at the thought of his God that he's bursting with it, and he's then, therefore, you know, not content with his own joy and satisfaction. But he turns to even the spirit world and all the world to say, bless the Lord, bless the Lord. Just speak well of him. And do so in the morning, is what we learned, you know, last week. Brother Shirley, you can feel it already, I hope, you know, this morning, just being in the presence of the saints, and as we read these words here today, if that was the way we started the day, with just a burst of divine thought and energy, wouldn't we be a better people? You know, wouldn't we be a better, happier people? Have a more positive kind of outlook on life. And I know, when the alarm clock goes off, how many of you have an alarm of some kind? Raise your hand, you have an alarm? It's an alarm. What does it do first thing in the morning? It alarms you, doesn't it? And it's after the day because there you are, sweet and soundly, we trust and hope, you know, and then suddenly you are jarred out of your repose, you know, to enter into this world. And for most of us, I suspect, you know, the very way that we wake up is distressing. It's kind of unsettling. And it's not, oh boy, I can't wait, you know. And most of us go, oh no, do I have to? And David doesn't seem, at least, to speak much of those kinds of mornings, certainly not in Psalm 5 or this Psalm here. It is with a bursting joy that he's calling upon all creation. And remember, we've talked about this several times in these preceding lessons, David's one of the most heavily burdened hearts in human history. The guy had a terribly hard life, and throughout all of his life, the sword never departed from his house, in fact. And so he's just suffering terribly, and yet these kinds of thoughts predominate in his life. He's got the others. We'll see Psalms that are on that negative note, but his is a heart, brethren, that is full of appreciation and joy for his God. Why don't we wake up like that every morning? Perhaps verse 2 will help us to appreciate why. He says, bless the Lord, O my soul, and forget none of his benefits. Forget none of his benefits. Is there anyone among us who then, carefully in collaboration with every other one among us, would confer together to make a list of all of the blessings with which God has blessed us and be able to compile the comprehensive list, if we put all of our heads together, of every blessing that God gives to us as his children? We probably couldn't get the tenth part, could we? And here's David saying, don't forget a single one. Don't let one blessing that God offers to you as an individual or to the human population at large ever slip from your mind. Remember them all. And truly, brethren, I know I'm failing at this. I think most of us are failing at this. Perhaps David was better at this. But let's spend a lot of time this morning on sort of a side study from 103, which I hope, though, because it is so bound up so many other times in Psalms and other places in the Bible, will help us, brethren, to try and put it into this terrible problem of forgetfulness. So ordinarily, when I'm teaching on Psalms, and you've seen it already in the last five, and you'll see it as we go forward, you know, in succeeding Psalms, I try to stay right there in the Psalm. This morning, you might want to grab a pencil, you know, take some notes here, because we're going to deviate from it quite a bit, even though it's one of the, you know, the substantial Psalms, got 22 verses in it. But let's think about this forgetfulness thing and try to find an antidote for it so that we'll have more of the spirit of David, a man after God's own heart, living within us. Here's what Isaiah 51 verses 12 and 13 says. Here's something God moved Isaiah to say. Who are you that you're afraid of man who dies and is made like grass? You have forgotten the Lord your Maker, who stretched out the heavens and laid the foundations of the earth. So what he's saying is, what a silly mistake. Who are you to rise up and be worried about the stuff that mere people can put on you in the course of a day? Why are you worried about what the boss is going to, you know, demand of you in the course of this day? Why are you worried about what the teachers are going to demand? Why are you worried about, you know, money and all these various different kinds of cares that are really all of them the province of life under the sun, you know, and of human beings, rendering unto Caesar the things that are Caesar's, that are human? Why? Everybody's going to die. They're none of them, you know, so important that they won't. They're all just like grass. Get your priorities straight. And, you know, your problem is that you've forgotten the Lord, your Maker, who has this kind of power, who therefore can handle whatever kinds of insecurities you've got and whatever sorts of challenges you're going to face in the course of your given day. The problem of negativity and of weakness and fear, and the attendant kinds of problems that we have, the root of those problems, brethren, lies in forgetfulness. And there's an antidote that is going to be mentioned a lot of times. So you might want to just jot the reference down. You're certainly not going to have time to turn and look at all of these. But I want you to see that early on in the Scriptures, there is an activity that we find the great success stories of the Bible, those characters, practicing, that is difficult to do, called meditation. It's time-consuming. It requires discipline and effort. It requires prioritizing. Now, in Genesis chapter 24 and verse 63, Isaac went out for the purpose of meditating in the field. So it's not like he had nothing better to do. It's not like he wasn't a busy man. Let none of us think that because theirs was an agrarian society, you know, primarily, that you know, those were the sweet and wonderful good old days, you know, when he had lots of time to do such things like this. If anything, it was even worse. So he makes time. He went out to meditate, to contemplate, to ruminate, to just think on these things that God does for us. Joshua is ordered to meditate on this book of the law day and night. In Psalm 4, we were told to meditate in our hearts upon our beds. In Psalm 19, we are told to meditate, or let the meditation of my heart be acceptable. In Psalm 63, I meditate on you in the night watches. In Psalm 77, I'll meditate with my heart and my spirit ponders. Again in 77, I'll meditate on all your work and muse on your deeds. In Psalm 104, let my meditation be pleasing to him. Psalm 119, I'll meditate on your precepts and regard your ways. And again 119, I'll meditate on your wonders. And again 119, I'll meditate on your statutes. And again 119, I'll meditate on your precepts. And 119, how I love your law. It is the meditation all the day. Your testimonies are my meditation. I meditate on all your doings, on your wonderful works. I will meditate. David sees the problem in forgetfulness and recognizes that to correct it, you need to spend some time ensuring that you remember these things. You will remember to the extent and degree in which you focus your attention, exclude everything else, and then just spend time drifting in all these wonderful things. The book of the law, on the work that and deeds of our God, on his precepts, his wonders, his statutes, and all day long his law, his testimonies are my meditation. Brethren,
when you see something repeated so many times by a man after God's own heart, who conquered problems vastly superior to anything that you'll ever face, then we would be wise, don't you think? Well, hey, look at that. He recognized the problem of forgetfulness, but he also recognized, probably he's less forgetful than we are, you know, that if I spend a lot of time thinking about it, I'm less likely to forget about it. What is that just in Psalms? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13 times. But that meditation of David is revealed as sort of the core of David. Something he does morning, noon, and night, in the middle of the night. What is he doing? He is embedding the goodness of God in his mind. Because he knows that when he opens his eyes in the morning and he looks out at the world, he's going to see all the negativity and the perversion and the corruption and the filth and the evil and the problems that human beings can throw at your door. It's just mountainous. But he's ready. And so in the morning, bless the Lord, O my soul. Why? Because I remember what you've done for me. I've been thinking about what you've done for me. I am thrilled by what you have done for me. And I am ready, because man is just like grass, Lord. You. Isaiah 51 is after David's time by 250 years, but he knew it right well. You are the creator of the planet. What have I to fear? Again, another deviation. But brethren, above all these things, there's something that we forget that's mentioned in Psalm 103 in that first part. It's the first of these many benefits that he specifically mentions. Who pardons all your iniquities. Who pardons all your iniquities. The first really focused blessing of God is forgiveness. And then the one that he elaborates upon more than anything else, starting down in verse 9. He will not always strive with us, nor will he keep his anger forever. Now, brethren, when you go read the commentaries, and as you think about that verse, you might first think, you know, what he's saying there is, he's going to run out of patience. He won't always strive with us. He's going to come to an end. And he, you know, will not keep his anger forever. In other words, he's going to unleash it one of these days. And that's a principle I don't want to argue with. It is true that God is patient, and one day there will be, you know, a judgment. But brethren, that's not the only way to understand that. And if you read verse 10, it doesn't seem to be what's on his mind. He has not dealt with us according to our sins, nor rewarded us according to our iniquities. Well, what's he been doing? He's not striving. He doesn't always strive with us, from verse 9. It's saying he will, nor will he keep his anger forever. What I think he's saying is that God understands that he should keep his anger from us. And so, yeah, one day he'll let it out, but he does keep it for a long time. He doesn't reward us according to our iniquities. Look at 11. As high as the heavens are above the earth, so great is his what? His loving kindness. Not his anger toward those who fear him. In 12, as far as the east is from the west, so far he has removed our transgression from us. Just as a father has compassion on his children, so the Lord has compassion on those who fear him. For he himself knows our name. He's mindful that we are dust. All of this, brethren, just goes to the idea that God is forgiven. I think all those verses deal with that idea. And so, why not rise up in the morning as happy as you can be? God forgives. This is the first of those things that David thinks about. And again, deviating, we'll get back into Psalm in a minute, but look at 2 Peter chapter 1 and verses 5 through 9. And this time I would have you turn, if you have your Bible there, turn over to 2 Peter 1. Might do as well to remember what we studied in our Wednesday night classes here a year ago. And that summer series that we had last time around was on Peter.
and his epistles. And so come now to 2 Peter chapter 1, verses 5 and following. For this reason also, applying all diligence in your faith, supply moral excellence. In your moral excellence, knowledge. In your knowledge, self-control. In your self-control, perseverance. In your perseverance, godliness. And in your godliness, brotherly kindness. In your brotherly kindness, love. For of these qualities are yours and are increasing, they render you neither useless nor unfruitful in the... Unfruitful in the true knowledge of our Lord Jesus Christ. For he who lacks these qualities is blind or short-sighted, having forgotten his what? His purification from his former sins. Why do we lack all these qualities? We forgot that God has forgiven us. And so, since he has, we ought to respond in a manner that takes us farther away from sin, because that's what Jesus paid the price to take us out of. And if we would free ourselves from sin because God forgave us in the blood of his own Son, then these qualities will not only be in us, but they will be growing, we'll be acquiring them throughout the course of our entire lives. They will abound within us. So this, brethren, is a big problem, Old Testament times or new. God forgave me. And isn't it interesting? And even in the very way we express it, you know, I don't know how to change it. I'm going to say it's a fault. But it's always in the past tense. You know, God did that back then. God did that when I was baptized into Christ. He forgave me. He's also, brethren, forgiving us every single day. David knew it. Peter knows it. We tend to forget it. And as a result, we kind of eviscerate our spiritual selves. We tend to just kind of rip all the strength and the energy out of ourselves. We become less happy about our lives and less eager to go live them in his service. Less of the virtues are built in our characters. Why? Because we forget. And why do we forget? Because we don't meditate. Most of us don't. Maybe you do. You do. I'm so happy for you. You know, but brother, isn't that something that we just have to consciously decide to do, that we'll have to do battle with the rest of our lives to accomplish and to succeed? Now, back to Psalm 103. And as you turn back to Psalm 103, you probably tell from the size of the text right there, we're going to go very, very rapidly and take only about 5 more minutes, as a matter of fact. And we're going to read down through this psalm and just see a very lengthy list of things that are on David's mind. In chapter 103 and in verse 3, in the last part, he says, who heals all your diseases. And then he says in the first part of verse 4, who redeems your life from the pit. And then in the second part of verse 4, he says, who crowns you with loving kindness and compassion. And then he says in verse 5, who satisfies your years with good things, so that your youth is renewed like the eagle. In other words, God is providing for us. God is renewing and strengthening us. He is rescuing us, well, healing us, rescuing us. You know, he loves us. Now, just a word about this eagle here. Just in passing, you know, we love expression. But please don't think that what this means is that by the time you get up into your 90s, you're going to feel like a teenager again. I think we've got a few people in the audience who might be able to tell you that is just not so. Forget it. That's not what he's talking about here. Probably what this image is about, though, has to do with the fact that eagles molt. Molting is when they shed all those old feathers and do what? Get themselves a new bunch. So that your youth is renewed in the sense that there is a beautification of
you know, the outside of this verb. It's not that his muscles are physically stronger. They get old, weaken, and die like everything else does. That's physical. But they are renewed, you know, in that sense. Their youth comes back because it's like putting on a new set of clothes. Again, when you read the commentators here, what they're suggesting is that this is an image that might remind us of 2 Peter 1. Putting on these new virtues, clothing ourselves with character and qualities of a spiritual nature that God would have us be renewing ourselves in Him. That is, changing the kind of people that we are spiritually, intellectually, emotionally, the kind of heart and mind that we have. God's not so concerned about keeping us all being teenagers, you know. His muscle is trying to change our characters. This is very likely what he had in mind there with that figure of the eagle. Then, in verse 6, the Lord performs righteous deeds and judgments for all who are oppressed. In verse 7, he made known his ways to Moses, his acts to the sons of Israel. In verse 8, the Lord is compassionate and gracious, slow to anger, and abounding in loving kindness. Now we're skipping 9 through 14. We read those a minute ago. So in 15 and following, as for man, his days are like grass. As a flower of the field, so he flourishes. When the wind has passed over it, it is no more. And its place acknowledges it no longer. But the loving kindness of the Lord is from everlasting to everlasting on those who fear Him, and His righteousness to children's children. To those who keep His covenant and who remember His precepts to do them. Well, there's that remembrance again we saw in verses 9 through 14 and we saw in all the passages on the meditation. And so what David is now doing is meditate on the enormous number of good things that God does not only for you, but for generations to come. For your children and your grandchildren, your life will bear fruit in making their lives happier. Then comes the conclusion, which begins in verse 19, the Lord has established His throne in the heavens, and His sovereignty rules over all. Bless the Lord, you angels, mighty in strength who perform His word, obeying the voice of His word. Bless the Lord, all you His hosts, you who serve Him, doing His will. Bless the Lord, all you works of His, in all places of His dominion. Bless the Lord, oh my soul. Well, now, brethren, if we had filled our minds in meditation on these things, if these are your meditation, well, then what else would come out of your mouth? What other fruit would your mind bear? See that? Philippians 4 says this, to meditate on these things. Colossians 3 says this, to meditate on these things. Throughout the Old and the New Testament, God has been telling us over and over and over again, would you really like to just throw off the covers in the morning and rise up fearlessly, happily, and eagerly to go face a world of trouble that's described like grass that just withers and blows away? Okay? You would like to just sort of stride into the day thinking it can't get any better than this. In Psalm 103 and all the passages on meditation give us a prescription on how to accomplish it. It is, to cite now from a different passage in the Colossian letter, to let the word of Christ richly dwell within you. Colossians 3:16. Let that be the meditation of your heart, morning, noon, and night, and in the reaches of the night. Then, brethren, bless the Lord. Oh, my soul. See, nothing else even matters. Appreciate your attention, as always. Grateful for your devotion to your God, your eagerness to be here in the middle of a long weekend, for instance, when I thought the house would really be missing an awful lot of bodies. It still were quite full, despite all the people traveling. Bless the Lord, brethren. Bless the Lord. And we will grow as well. If we can help you in that, personal growth, if we can help you with some problem you're struggling with, if we can help you in prayer, in Bible study, in some form of counseling, or some other way, let it be known. Please come forward and speak with me as we stand and sing.